kids, it's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
What's up, everybody? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. Joining as usual, Cole, how are you doing?
She wasn't even here last week. How can you say as usual? It wasn't track.
I mean, she was technically on the episode just after everybody else.
Yeah, I just skipped the party cast because sometimes my brain likes to go, you shouldn't do this
she
today.
She couldn't deal with our bullshit that night.
I mean, that is strong reasoning.
There are just times where your brain's like, fuck the fuck off. And I'm like, okay. Sometimes you just gotta do it. And so I did, and I was like, my brain says fuck the fuck off, and Joe was like, fine, see you next week.
Yeah. Take your night.
Fuck the night off, I've been doing this for years, doing the party.
So yeah, it is a party cast. Tim Ekibis is here, Pernell Vaughn is here, Chris Taylor is here. How is everybody doing?
Well, besides doing like ridiculous and like butchered rap lyrics, I'm doing great. How about you guys?
What? I'm fine.
my withered husk continues to draw breath.
Ooh, there you go.
That is a positive.
I got a cool mail tracking from Chris today, though, which was cool.
What'd you say, Pernell? I didn't hear you.
I got that cool mail package from you today.
Oh, awesome. Great.
So I want to send mail.
I will officially be revisiting Roland's Curse, which I haven't played since I was like freaking like 10 years old. So that'll be a nice, pleasant revisit.
Yeah, I've been having fun with it. Pernell is the only other human being on the planet that I know that has heard of the Game Boy game Roland's Curse, which is a cursed Game Boy adventure game. And I had it when I was like a teenager, and then I lost it, and so I repurchased it, and then I found my old copy while I was packing, getting all my stuff out of my mom's house. It was just in a random box. So, yeah, when I found out that Pernell knew about the game and didn't have one, I was like, well, duh, I gotta fix this. So I sent him my extra copy.
And it's cool, especially because I used to have it as a kid, but I ended up selling it back when I was like really in wanting, and I really had a desire to get like a next-gen console, quote-unquote, and I didn't have a job and any money, so I was like, well, how do you get money? Sell your beloved treasures.
Yeah.
Trying to think about those dark times.
We all fell for that at one point.
At one point, we all made that bad decision.
Here, giving us all of your Super Nintendo RPGs. We're going to give you $200. You could get a game machine with this, or a portion of one.
Yeah,
like this is fucked. But as a child, I was like, well, I guess this is the best I can do. It's like my dad will give me this.
No,
I remember selling a few hundred NES games to. God, was it EB at the time? I don't remember what company it was at the time. It could have been a Funko Land, whoever it was, just to get a PS2, Grand Theft Auto 3, and Final Fantasy X.
Amazing.
Yeah. I know.
The PS2, because when I sold my NES games, it was towards a Saturn.
Ooh.
I never sold any NES games. I turned in some Super Nintendo games to get some N64 games.
Oh, man. Were they good N64 games?
That depends on... I mean, one of them was Earthbound, but...
Oh.
We don't know that.
So, no.
One of the ones you traded off was...
Yeah, Earthbound. I got another copy of Earthbound eventually, and then I sold that one, too, because...
Earthbound was my first eBay purchase. Yeah. Or that or some They Might Be Giants cassette tapes.
The only thing in those stacks that I actually wish I still had was my copy of Pocky and Rocky, partially because super fucking expensive now.
That's a hard one to get now.
I was sad because I ended up buying two copies of Earthbound on eBay because one of them was purchased by, basically, when you bid on multiple auctions expecting to lose one of them.
Right.
So I didn't want to renege, so I purchased both of them. And when they came in the mail, one of my friends didn't have Earthbound. So I was like, all right, no problem. Here, I'll just give one to you. Like, I just gave it to him for free. And
aren't you a good guy?
Yeah, that's a good thing to do.
It was, except he got rid of the box and instructions, or the box and the guy, because he was like, oh, it takes up too much space.
Well, so you did it. You did a good thing and lost a friend.
I was like, why would you do that? And he's like, you know, it's not that big a deal. I'll get other stuff. I was like, no, you won't. It's fucking Earthbound. You don't just replace that. That's why it sells for a stupid amount of money. I could have made money on that shit.
Rip that guy.
There's a lot of rip going on there. I was quite appalled. But in the end, I guess he is technically still my friend. But I always chastise him. Like, you got rid of all this shit. Because he got rid of a bunch of boxes and, like, instructions and stuff. Because, like, he's the one who was like, you know, if I just put all my CDs in this binder and then destroy all the cases, I'm like, what are you, GameStop now? Like, I don't understand. Like, I can't do it. I'd rather just put them all in a basement and hope they don't flood.
Like, my buddy sent me a little folder full of GameCube games, just games in a tiny little binder. No cases, no manuals. It hurts my soul, especially because one of them, Skies of Arcadia.
Oh, God!
Disc only, and it is in pretty crap shape, too. Like, it,
you know,
it hurts.
You know what I have that is a caseless GameCube game that I got for free? Freaking Fire Emblem.
Holy fuck.
Yeah, I have a caseless Fire Emblem.
Jeez.
Didn't cost no money, though, so I'm not complaining.
But, I would have sold it to you.
My ultimate, well, it's not even fucking my free game story, we used to have near our house, we had a flea market junk shop where I bought many classic game cartridges before kind of eBay blew up. So it was just like, here's a big bin of NES games, and they're each $3. And, you know, you'd get anything, fucking anything out of those bins for $3. You name it, like where I got all my Castlevanias, Double Dragons, Ninja Gaidens, etc. Super Nintendo games were like $6, and, you know, they'd cut you a break on it. But once I asked him, I'm like, hey, don't you guys ever get in, like, you know, Sega Saturn? Or not Saturn. I said, I wanted a Sega CD. That's what I was after. And they're like, well, people bring them in, but we don't buy them because nobody wants them. And I'm like, I understand, but I will buy one. So they bought a few of them. And, you know, I got my Saturn, which, you know, I used a whole bunch, tons. But my friend, Dave Avino, who's been on the show on occasion, he went there and got his Sega CD. And while he was there, like, you know, checking out, like, because they just have piles of shit around, like, stuff behind the counter, whatever. And he looked behind the counter, he happened to see, like, a Sega CD-looking case, and it was a Sega CD game. He's like, hey, what's that down there? And the guy was like, oh, huh, well, here you go, you can have this for free. It was fucking Snatcher.
It's always Snatcher in these stories.
It was a fucking
Jesus.
Complete copy of Snatcher.
Oh, my God.
No one wants this garbage. Get it out of my sight.
Oh, here you go. Okay. All right. Just Snatcher, you know, whatever. And he still has it.
My store.
Oh, that is crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel terrible. Like, the closest I've ever had to a cool story like that, well, two times. One was going to, like, a friend's, this is a friend's friend who was moving to Germany. So they was like, well, I don't need my games anymore, so I'm trying to unload them. And they had Mega Man X 1 through 3, again, after I'd already sold my copies back in the day. And I was like, oh, I missed these games. And at first, their game was like for $10. But I kind of let myself get too excited. I was like, oh, crap, Mega Man X. He's like, $20. She's like really getting over on me. I'm sort of thinking, like, okay, she's pulling that thing. But what she doesn't know is that these games are worth way more than that anyway. So yeah. I was like, oh, shit. You got me there. I should not have acted so excited.
Oh, you got me, buddy. Here's your $20.
Take the games. And then the one other thing, which is probably the biggest what them would do, though, a part of me feels guilty about it. The other part of me is like, meh. Which is that way back in the day, I had a friend who was like really disgruntled, and he worked for like Electronics Boutique at the mall. So I was visiting there with a friend one day, just hanging out. We were talking, looking at the games. And I was a poor college student, looking at the stuff they had on the shelf. And as we were talking, we were walking out of the store, I was like, man, I really wish I could afford Magic by Rareth. Right now, I love that. I want to play it so bad. It's a work in disguise game, blah, blah, blah. And the guy just goes, do you want it? Do you really want this guy like that? I was like, yeah. He was like, dick, zip, boom, here you go. Just threw it to me at the door at the store. It's like, here you go. It's yours now. Just take it. I'm like, what? I was like, what do I do? I was like, on one hand, I guess this is wrong, but on the other hand, the store clerk gave it to me, so I guess it's okay. So yeah. I'm just like, I guess that's good. So, of course, as you know, that game didn't stay on the shelves for very long, and then it went up in value by a stupid amount. So if I didn't get it that day, I would have never gotten it. So,
jeez.
Yeah, I got a copy of that game for like $40.
And now, woof.
Do we remember where I got that copy from, Joe?
No, no clue.
It was you. I bought it from you.
None. No idea at all.
Yeah.
What is this?
I have no recollection of this memory. This the dream has no memory of this.
Poor Joe.
Yeah, there's a lot of things the dream has no memory of all of a sudden.
Well, this is one of those things where I was like, you know, I just need somebody to pick up this new game or try to pay some bills or something like that.
Yeah, it was something where Joe was needed money for something, and I helped the guy out.
Yeah, I don't even remember, but I'm one of those guys that I would rather see somebody who would enjoy it have it for a cheaper price than throw it on eBay and deal with fees and deal with eBay's bullshit and everything. I'd rather a friend have it.
Thanks. I will say, though, there are times where that when people do that, and you got to remember that kind of thing. Like, I did have one friend who did that sort of thing for me, and to this day, if he needs something, I got his back, which is, he gave me a copy of Pothole Mail that someone brought to him for, like, $45, and he gave it to me because he knew how much I love Pothole Mail, but, you know, again, sold it and never got it back, and he's like, well, look, I could have made a big chunk of change off of this game, but it's you, so take it. And I'm like, well, shit. I guess I'm kind of life indebted to you now, huh? Because I can't just, you know, renege on this. So, because for anybody that knows me, well, rather people know me but don't know this because I don't talk about it so much. But like, Pothole Mail was like one of my favorite games as a child. Never owned it. I just rented it constantly. So the fact that I was able to get it from us, this is amazing. I can finally say I own Pothole Mail.
Nice.
Oh, I know what I can say. I could say thank you to Root Beer Is My Jam, who just subbed for the 16th month in a row. No, not in a row. Just 16th month total.
Jesus. Like the SNL podcast is jam, not Root Beer.
16 months is like 18 months too many.
Root Beer Is My Jam is a good person. I've never met them, and they might have a dartboard with my face on it in their home. But
probably.
I can tell.
Root Beer is a good bean.
Good peoples.
Good bean indeed. Right, Purnell?
Oh, fucking yeah!
That's right,
yes! I keep forgetting I have a sound buddy. Like, what are you talking about? I didn't say anything.
I love that you play Purnell clips when you've got the real deal right here.
I know.
Makes it funny. I'm like, what are you talking about? I didn't say anything. Oh, fucking yeah!
I don't even remember that. Right, a recording of Purnell.
Fucking yeah! I never said that. What did you like, Purnell? What do you think of the idea of selling all your games to Joe for like flat cost? Fucking yeah! No!
Well, a contract's a contract.
Fucking yeah! Binding. You can't renege. It's like a freaking Evangelion title. You can't renege. There you go. Oh, Jesus. Geez. A franchise that will never conclude itself. Jeebus. Remember when people were all excited about that? Like, oh yeah, they're going to retell it, and they're going to tell it right this time. And not only did it remain confusing, but they didn't even friggin' finish it. And it started like 2010?
I don't even know.
Yeah. I stay away from the animes.
You know what I do know? I know that we have a lot of games to talk about.
Do we?
Yeah, we do.
Yeah, we should probably get into these, huh? Shit. I realized there were games to talk about. I came on here to talk about, you know, Mr. Pibb.
Yeah, we know you don't come on here to talk about games for now.
Mr. Pibb and my best friend Dynamo and all that cool shit. You know, all the segments.
He comes here for the chatter and then ends up getting sucked into doing reviews. He's like, oh shit, I forgot I had to do those.
If you want a platform for your bullshit, you need to pay in blood.
That's quotable, by the way. That's some quotable shit. Oh, some people pay more blood for less, so I'll take it.
I'm just writing down paid in blood for the episode title.
Paid blood spurge bullshit.
Oh, man. Usually the review codes come free, but this time they came with a heavier price.
Razor blades. Razor blades for everybody. I'm going to cut bitches.
Reviews for the damned. That should be the name of the movie. There, yeah.
That'd be a terrible movie.
He can't stop doing
for the damned.
He began it. Then it became his lifeblood.
Oh my god. Alright, are we ready for review? Should we dive into these?
Yes, we're ready.
Tim's Tim's like, oh god, ready. Please, yes.
I'm not as tired as I was last week. Not nearly.
That's good.
Gotta drink green tea at 10 p.m. like me.
This whole I'm going to bed early tonight because tomorrow's the first day of school for my kids is working out swimmingly for me. Yeah,
how's that going? I mean, you should have said something. We could have probably tried moving this an hour earlier if you would have, you know, communicated.
Come to Texas where it's still an hour ago.
Yeah, just move to Texas with Chris. You'll back be fine.
We all fucking know that it doesn't matter what time I go to bed. I'm not sleeping anyway. I don't fucking sleep.
You're going to be playing Horizon at like 2 in the morning anyway, right?
There's a 90% chance.
Yeah, right. Okay, so first game to talk about tonight is called Mortal Shell, developed by Cold Symmetry, published by PlayStack, released August 18th. Released August 18th on Xbox One, PS4, and PC for $29.99. Mortal Shell is a deep action RPG that tests your sanity and resilience in a shattered world. Your adversaries spare no mercy with survival demanding superior awareness, precision, and instincts. Possess lost warriors, track down hidden sanctums of the devout, and face formidable foes. Tim, that's a lot of big words in there. Sounds fancy.
What it means is this game is like fucking Dark Souls. That is what that all means. In the end of the day, this game is a lot like Dark Souls. That's why I chose to review it, because Joe sent me the trailer, and I looked at it, and like I looked at all the dog whistle shit in that trailer, and I'm like, oh, I get this. Yeah, I see what you're doing. My fucking flies down here piss me off. Yeah, so Mortal Shell is a action RPG game that is, it's hard, it obfuscates how you play the game, it makes you figure out a lot on your own, it has death mechanics where you leave a bloodstain on the ground somewhere, it's very, so here's the thing, it is very Dark Souls-y, like if you... Not to cut to the chase, but to cut to part of the chase. Like, if you don't like Dark Souls, just skip ahead in the next review, because this game is not for you. This is not one of those. This is not one of those mind changers on the old Dark Souls. There, in fact, it is possibly worse in some ways. In that, it takes me back. I mean, I guess. You know, after being a fan of the Souls games and having played all of them, like, they got progressively easier as I played them, as I started them up, and I'm like, okay, I see these mechanics, I recognize things, I understand what's going on. This takes a lot of the, like, mechanics and kind of framework of a Souls game, and then does a lot of its own shit. So, drink. Water. So this game does not have extensive like armor and equipment and accessories and like straight up like statistical upgrades or any of that shit. It is also not like 60 hours long. This game is actually like 10 to 15 hours long, so it's kind of a compressed Souls experience. So you have your weird intro where your weird flesh man who looks like 12 from Street Fighter 3, he pops out of the world. You kind of go through a tutorial, you fight a boss that's meant to kick your ass, and he probably will. Then you get spot out in the world, you start walking around, and they don't even, like, drop you at the hub. They don't even drop you off right next to it. They drop you off kind of near it. So if you're me, you can wander off in the wrong direction for, let's say, hours. Well, it was just like a couple hours. It was like an hour and a half that I, wow. before I came back around, and I found, like, oh, I needed to go left and not right. So pro tip, when you get out into kind of the first area where it opens up, look exploring to the left, not the right. Don't go down those paths to the right. You'll get there eventually. But yeah, so the game is called Mortal Shell, and what you'll find probably before you get to that area, but you can skip it, and there's a few more you'll find later in the game, are husks of fallen humans that you just kind of inhabit. You force your wormy little 12-looking ass inside of them, and you take over that character. Like, those are you could argue, like, yeah, these are your armor sets. But you just get that. So there's kind of the base, and each one has different stats and a different ability tree. So the first guy you pick up is the all around stat guy, but he is really good at this thing called hardening. wow, that sounds like something. one of the new mechanics this thing, one of the main mechanics this game has is when you go to block, your character will harden like a carapace around themselves that will block any incoming damage, and it's on a cooldown. So when you're getting into combat, you can like time your weapon strikes. Like, okay, I'm going to move in on this guy. I'm going to start to attack. And if he starts to counterattack, then I can harden, nullify the damage from the blow coming back at me, and then get my hit in and then move away. Or I can get in there and like get a couple slashes, and then it's like, oh, they're not stunned. They're starting to slash me. I can harden, or I hear something pitter pattering at me. I'm going to harden. That's your main defensive mechanic. So that first shell you pick up, a lot of its upgrades are based around improving your hardening skills. There's other ones, and they're all, the game clues you in as to where they are located, kind of in this, like when you go in, once you get out of the tutorial, you're dropped in this fucking swamp that is very crisscrossy and maze-like, and that is kind of the hub for the game. And all the other shells, the other three shells, are around the swamp. They're not like, I actually, in my travels, veering off the beaten path and going away from the hub as far as I fucking could, I actually almost, I basically happened right upon one, but it was guarded, so I died real bad. So the game will, there are prompts. I'm trying not to give away too much, because a lot of the fun of playing Souls games is discovering like what's going on in them. But there are things that will prompt you to say, like, hey, there is a shell over here you should go look at. So the other ones specialize. There is one, which is a scholar, which he... There's a meter to your combat, which is called resolve. So he has a lot of upgrades that revolve around resolve and giving you more of that, which lets you do more special abilities in combat. There is another guy who is the stamina guy, because this game has a big, long green stamina meter, just like Dark Souls. But he has one that's like twice as long as everyone else's, and a lot of his abilities revolve around like using your stamina. You can have it sub in for attack sometimes, using poison. I didn't use that guy very much. I used the beefy guy, the dude who had the largest fucking health meter, and
big meaty men.
Yeah, he was a big meaty man who had upgrades that would help stagger enemies and, poise through attacks so he wouldn't get knocked back. And importantly, like an ability that would stack, you'd get stacks when you'd get a marker basically when you killed an enemy, and the more you killed, the higher your damage went, until you got knocked out of your shell. And yeah, that was a nice, ability. But yeah, so you can find those or not. There's definitely achievement in there for not picking up any shells through the game and just going through it butt naked. Which of course some people, and tune into the next Games Done Quick for somebody doing that, I'm sure. I mean, other people had unlocked that achievement I saw. So, you know, it's whatever, it's doable.
Chris, did Lobos do that yet?
Nah, I don't know. Why did I rush to unmute my mic to say that?
Yeah, so like I mentioned, when you're in combat, when your health reaches zero, your dude will get knocked out of the shell, and the shell will be kind of frozen there. And you have a moment to try to... you're still alive. If you take basically one more hit, then you're dead. But if you can jump back into your shell, you'll be back to full health, so you kind of get a second chance there. And of course, if you die a second time, then you're dead, and you will port back to the nearest weird lady with antlers and a mask that you last talked to.
Interesting that's character description.
That's the lady that helps you with your upgrades by having you drink divine tar. Tar is the currency in this game, much like souls would be. It's tar. That is what it is. Of course.
Cole, do you want to chime in on tar?
Tar?
Nope. I sure don't.
Yeah, you'll pour back to her, and then you'll have the opportunity to run back and get your blood stain and get your tar back that you dropped on the ground. There's also a secondary curse or currency called glimpses. A lot of the lore of the game revolves around like memories of the past. So you have these shells that you inhabit, but they were people. And as you unlock more abilities, you get more glimpses and memories of that character. And that's how that lore is revealed to you. Which is cool. The game. So the items, when you pick up an item in this game, it doesn't tell you what it does. You have to use it to find out.
I hate games like that.
Which is that is an old school roguelike thing. But on the flip side, it does encourage you to like actually use your goddamn items just to see what they do, instead of letting them sit in your inventory forever. There also is you start out the game with just kind of like a basic like broadsword. There are three more weapons that you can find, and the game also will. There are prompts and hints as to where you need to go to find those weapons. And you kind of get to that area, and then you fight a boss and you get the weapon basically. And each weapon has, there's weapon upgrades. So there's like a forge where you can upgrade your weapon. So you have your swampy hub. Off to the side of the swamp, there are three temples, and that's kind of your goal in the game is to go through those temples to get to the end to fight a boss and retrieve a sacred gland. Yes, a gland. You reach into some weird looking creature and you pull out a gland, and you got to bring that back to some dude in the hub who is definitely not suspicious. But each weapon is kind of tied to one of those areas, so you'll get to the area. You'll be able to get that weapon right away, and then there will be upgrade materials in that area for that weapon to unlock all of its abilities. You can also, aside from that, upgrade their damage. You do get there is a item that activates a parry mechanic, and when you parry something, when you have a bit of that resolve meter, you can, I don't remember what it's called, but you can stab the enemy and get some of your life back. But only if you have meter on it. The loop of the game is you're in the swamp. Once you find the damn hub and stop running around like an idiot, you kind of have to start feeling your way around this swamp because there is no map. But eventually you'll figure kind of your way around based on landmarks and such. You find these temples. You fight your way through them, these discrete areas, bring the glands back, and... that's the game. And it is good. It's very good. I love it. I actually finished it in a fucking week, which never happens. Ooh. But I couldn't stop playing it. Despite the fact that my child didn't like me playing it because it was scary. he got kind of used to it with some areas. There was just like, I mean, some enemies are pretty creepy. I have to make light of some spooky ghost enemies. Like, they're just spooky ghosts, buddy. Whatever. I'll stab them with my giant sword here and it'll be fine.
I mean, it was T-rated, so it's not like you were playing a super gory M-rated game.
Yeah, but there are these like beast things that will pounce on you and bite at your neck, and I think that's what he really didn't like. I mean, if he had his choice, I mean, he'd much rather I'd be playing Paper Mario for sure.
Yeah.
But I wanted to play this. But yeah, it has like the mechanics of the fighting and the cadence feels good, and it does feel just like a Souls game. In waiting for attacks and like picking your spots and like learning enemy movements. Knowledge is power. The areas are interesting. Like, I like all the temples, it has this thing. So like in every Souls game, like eventually I kind of like, once I kind of figure everything out, like I just kind of blow through the last like third of the game. And this was no different. Like, I literally beat the last temple in about a half hour. Cause I didn't die. I just ran down in, killed the boss in one go and left. like I just smoked it because I'd figured out my timings in combat with the weapon I was using, and when to harden. But that's like what makes these games great to me, is because you learn, you master them, and you can just, you know how to deal with the challenges. And the game does, but besides that, and there's a lot of things I'm not mentioning here, it does a lot of things differently to surprise and swerve you. Like, yes, it is just like this one hub area and these three other small areas, but there are moments where things will change, I guess, that you might not expect. And and you will have to adapt to those. And just, I just spent like, you know, like the first like 3-4 hours, I'm just wandering around going like, what the fuck is going on in this game? Like, I just don't even know. Like, there's a giant frog over here. I still don't even know what to do with this guy.
Well, sounds like this is a good one. So for $30, give us your verdict.
Oh, it's a steal for $30. But I mean, yeah, it's a smaller Souls experience made by a smaller team. It does some fun, different things. I think games that are about $30 and about 10 to 15 hours long are great. And this is, you know, I beat it in a week. It's not a heavy commitment of time or money. Yeah, I think it's, I mean, I've already been like knocking down the door of my friends that I know play Souls, my Souls bros, and being like, yo, you need to check this game out because it's legit.
Yeah, you were telling Wood about it, weren't you?
I was telling, Will about Will. It. And yeah, I was texting some other people. But yeah, because I liken Souls fans to hardcore drug addicts. is that like once you get like that first like good hit, which for me was Demon Souls, like you just start chasing that high, man. You start looking for games that are going to give you that high. So it's like for a long time, whenever I'd hear Souls, like I'm like, okay, I got to check this game out. And sometimes I'm like, I got kind of high. Like Salt and Sanctuary was okay. I got like a little bit of a buzz off it, but like this game got me pretty high, man. I really liked it.
La Mulana, which sucks because there's no La Mulana like genre floating around out there.
Yeah, where's the La Mulana likes? Llama Llama likes.
You're saying everything. See, it's just so perfect.
But yeah, but like so many games, you know, out there are like, you know, Souls has been very influential, which you've seen more, I guess, in like the last 5 years. There's like so many indie games that are trying to be Souls-like. There's, you know, you have games like Lords of the Fallen, which was, it was like Souls, except dog shit. And then, you know, the Surge games that were like better. I mean, I shouldn't say dog shit. It was just like, wow, this is just totally average, like going through the motions, bringing nothing to the table here.
Still have my Lords of the Fallen Collector's Edition.
Why? Oh my God, Joe. So yeah, you
it's actually supposedly worth a pretty penny now. I might look into selling it.
Yeah, there's like what Code Vein, which is like anime Souls. You see it a lot in, you know, there's been 2D variations. There's been, you just see like little elements of it in other games. And yeah, like this one is one that I think really nailed it without feeling derivative, with still like bringing cool new stuff and not overstaying its welcome. Like, it's really like well-paced, well-priced, you know, good length on it. It's good. Blew me away. I think I vaguely heard about it at some point as like, oh, there's this little indie team making a game that's like Souls and it might be okay. but it really wasn't on my radar until the review code popped up. So pleasant surprise.
Awesome. Good to hear. Mm. All right. Well, I guess that is it for you. We shall let you get going.
I'm going to go nap.
All right, you got any final words?
I don't. No, sorry. Sorry.
Nothing?
Sorry. No, nothing. Good night.
Good night.
Oh, I guess no. I'll plug my Twitch, because I streamed twice in the last 2 days at twitch.tv/xstrikestudios, all one word. I've been building Legos because I got the Lego NES, so I started building it Sunday. And tonight I got they did some blind bag figures for the Mario set, so I got some of those in, and me and the kid built those and checked those out real quick tonight. Even though I got 3 fucking doubles,
I hate blind bags for that very reason.
It's a problem for me, but because I went through that and I'm just like, well, I guess I'm gonna have to fucking buy more because that's the kind of idiot that I am. so there will be more of that coming ahead.
Gotta catch them all, right?
Yeah. I mean, they're cool little sets, and now I got some that I can take to work and, put on my desk there, and then, some to leave at home. Eventually I'll probably get more of them, but I got to keep building the NES because I worked on it for 2 hours and I'm like not even halfway through building the actual console. So
there'll
probably be more of that this weekend. So, and I'll sit there and build on it and chat and talk about games and shit. Yeah.
Cool. That's it.
Thanks.
Bye.
Bye.
Hi.
Oh, man. All right. Next game to talk about is called Giraffe and Annika, developed by Atelier Mimina. I don't know if I probably butchered it. I don't know.
That's okay.
Released
August. When you pick a name like that, it gets butchered.
Yeah, it's their fault, clearly.
Exactly.
I'm innocent in this. Released August 25th on Switch and PS4 digital for $29.99 and published by NIS America. Available physically for $49.99 and includes a soundtrack, art book, and a patch set. It's releasing August 27th on Xbox One for $29.99 and published there by Playism. Lovable cat-eared Annika sets off on a grand quest on the island of Spica. 3D adventure and rhythm action genres mesh in the lush, pastoral, and beautiful Magna-inspired world of Giraffe and Annika. Chris, tell us about this one.
Okay, so it's like Souls. Just kidding, like Dark Souls. Anyways.
Is it a shmup, too? Do you want to tell us what a shmup is, quick?
Well, for the definition of a shmup, may I direct you to the game Beaker Unleashed? Unleashed? Unloaded? Reloaded.
Is Bunsen in it too?
Who?
Oh, you mean
Bunsen and Beaker?
Yeah,
Muppets.
Oh yeah, yeah. I think it was Beaker Reloaded. Anyways, okay. No. None of that. So Giraffe and Annika. This is a very peaceful kind of Zelda-ish game. It's 3D and stuff, and you run around and do things. You play as Annika, who is a girl who has cat ears and a cat tail. It's not quite explained, but she is the last of a kind of, she starts off as just like a little girl who gets like separated from her mom. And then she's in this world, suddenly where she is the last of a kind of person. I forgot what the name for them are, but it's okay. Cause she's the last one. So, kind of defeats the purpose of defining, anyways. So she ends up in this house that is, seems more or less abandoned, and you kind of like go through and investigate stuff and look around, and eventually you will come across a dungeon that you can't get into. And then shortly thereafter, she meets a boy who is named Giraffe, even though he looks like a deer, I think. That he's just another like pseudo animal type human. And from there, she basically, you can then go through the dungeon if you wait until nighttime to go through it. And so the action in this game is kind of not. It's more like exploring and kind of looking at things. And when dungeon time comes around, more or less what you do is you just go through the dungeon. Like, you don't have a weapon. There are ghosts, and they'll get mad at you and, like, chase you and stuff. But you just run right past them. Eventually,
what happens if they hit you?
You take damage. And if you take too much damage, then she falls over and you start again. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Also, if you go into water, it's very hard to get out of the water, and she eventually, quote-unquote, drowns. She just goes, like, blub, blub, and then the screen just, you know, fades out, and then she's back right where she started. You know, it's
she's dead. She's dead.
Yeah, she's dead. I mean, cool. You know, but it's not dramatic like Mario 64. Or it's more like Sonic, I guess. But, well, no, without, what? You know, where he just goes blub. But what?
Sonic gives people nightmares when he drowns.
What are you talking about? Because of the music. And this, yeah, yeah. That's the music that's getting people stressed. Sonic just goes, boo. He's like looking right at you, like with this accusatory look on his face.
Why would you just let this happen?
Yeah. How could you let this happen?
I think we're getting off track here.
Yeah, no. In fact, I'll get back to the music. But yeah, so like she can take damage. She has a life bar and stuff, but she's not there to confront, like, you know, she's not there to fight. In fact, when you get to the end of a dungeon, what you end up doing is a boss appears and you have to play a rhythm game. And the rhythm game's fairly simple. It actually goes to a separate screen and asks you to choose a difficulty. Easy, medium, or hard. Hint, hard is actually not very hard. And basically the enemy will do something that will cause a ball to kind of like a basketball coming towards you, and it will go to either the left or the right. And so you go to either the left or the right and, you know, hit it with your magic wand and, you know, to the rhythm. And sometimes stuff, you know, in the second boss onward, then, you know, they might throw something dangerous at you that you have to dodge as well. But, you know, it's just very, it's a chillax game. It has a day-night cycle that you can just kind of ignore. There is a quest that it frustrated me, even though it's the dumbest thing. And I really, you know, once I figured it out, I was like, oh, okay. So I was kind of fooled. It's where you run into a mother rabbit and you have to find her children. And they're around the kind of area that you were able to get to after the first dungeon. And I found all of them and then ran out of time before I got back to her house. And so I had to do it again the next day. Which, by the way, if you find any bed, which are scattered pretty liberally around the, around this island, then you can just sleep until morning or night. You know, there's no, time limit on anything. So you're just like, make it morning, make it night. And yeah, like, one of the rabbits was inconsistent in where it was, and it wasn't until it thwarted me a couple of times. I kept going back to the first place I saw it, and it wasn't there, and I didn't realize that, oh, well, this one rabbit actually moves, and yeah. So that's like, you know, that was like the one point at which I got like confused and thwarted by a game that I was like, this game's too easy, and then beating my head against a bunny finding quest. I'm like, this game is easy, plus I suck. Anyways, so it's yeah, it's like basically, you know, you just kind of go around and, you know, have fun and go through these dungeons where, you know, and one hesitates to call them dungeons because the second one contains an entire ocean. Like, it's okay. Yeah, it's like taking boats across like several docks and things like that, but like there's no, you know, there's no wall. Like, it's just a horizon inside a dungeon. So I'm kind of like, how is this anyways? And yeah, and as you do this, you know, you find out more about Annika and like a little bit more about her background and stuff like that. There's a lot of story. A lot of it's told in comic book style where it shows you just like a frame at a time, and it's so, so cute. It's delightful, in fact. The music, gorgeous. It's largely jazzy, which is interesting. But, like, there's not a whole lot of different songs in the game, but each one is just, like, a welcome, like, thing. You're just like, oh, it's this song again. Great. I love this one. Oh, and now it's switching to this one. I like this one, too. And
so that physical, like, version that has the soundtrack sounds pretty tempting.
Yeah, I would definitely listen to a soundtrack of this game. It's actually it's quite nice. Understated, but very nice. And of course, the rhythm songs are actually really good, too. As far as, I guess the game doesn't really have like voice acting or anything like that. Like I said, you know, everything's kind of told in text. And that's the other thing, you know, like the game doesn't smack of like a AAA high budget game. Like, you know, it to me felt the most like I said, the gameplay kind of feels like Zelda without the sword, you know, and enemies don't have any teeth kind of thing.
Yeah.
Just like a really like a Zelda with like bumpers, you know? But like graphically it kind of felt a little floaty and like, you know, like not everything is, it looks really nice, but sometimes when you get to moving, you're like, oh, okay, this is just good art, but like the actual engine is not, AAA or anything like that. It felt to me a lot like, Destiny Connect TikTok Travelers, from NIS. Really good looking game, but you can tell once you start moving around that things are like, oh, okay, this is, you know, it's a little floaty, it would be the word, which is fine because, like, you know, it takes until the end of the first dungeon for you to learn how to jump. Like, you're just walking around and, you know, and you swim, and the swimming is a little janky, but, you know, they, again, they're very forgiving. Like, if you drown, then you just, you're back on the beach and get to try it again. And, so yeah. All in all, I think it's a very like easy breezy game. It's nice and friendly, and it's a good romp. Don't expect a lot of challenge out of this one. Failing to find all the tiny bunnies, notwithstanding.
Friggin' bunnies.
Yeah, there's actually, it's kind of the opposite of Dark Souls. It's like you're just gonna win this game eventually.
So this is the Dark Souls of not being Dark Souls.
Yes, this is the Dark Souls. This is the Dark Souls of a children's storybook.
Nice. So, $30 on this one. What is your verdict?
Oh, $30 is a little bit of a hard sell to most gamers. However, people who don't want to have a bad time because they are not, I'm not going to say not good at video games, but not interested in being overly challenged, which those gamers exist for sure. I think it's, sorry, I had a smoothie and there's like seeds in my throat now.
Oh God. Don't let them grow.
Oh no. They'll grow into delicious berries. Oh. I'll get to eat again. Anyways, $30, like just know that you're getting into something that you can probably beat with on the first or second day. But it's going to be a delightful time. And definitely, you know, I think that this is a really good game for kids with like maybe a little bit of adult supervision to help like figure out what to do. Because the game's not great about like things like quest markers or telling you explicitly what you need to do. But, you know, it's, yeah, if you have somebody like kind of guiding a child through it, then I think it's a good experience. It's definitely aesthetically, it's cute and adorable and I love it. But, you know,
a little pricey for what it is.
Yeah. So, you know, for people who sound interested in it based on this review, I'd say it's a buy it because there's nothing wrong with the game at all. For everyone else, I'd say it's a try it just based on the low difficulty and relatively short, you know, the kind of terseness of the whole thing.
Gotcha. Any thoughts on the physical version for $50 that has the soundtrack, a little mini art book and a patch set?
Well, I mean, you know, that's typically with an NIS game, I always go for the physical with the big everything. You know, I bought The Longest 5 Minutes twice, and that game is like 10 hours at best.
Yeah.
But it's, because that game is absolutely my jam. It's a weird niche thing that I happen to adore, which is what this game is. So, yeah, I mean, absolutely. An NIS, like, physical edition of anything is going to be a great purchase. They always put a lot of care into those things.
Nice. And again, physical is only on PS4 and Switch since NIS only published the PS4 and Switch version. Shout out to Playism for bringing the Xbox version to the States for us. That is good to see. So everyone gets to play it. Next game to talk about is called Phonotopia Awakening, developed and published by Cape Cosmic, released August 20th on the Switch for $19.99. Join Gale, a simple villager who must heed the call for adventure when a great starship appears in the night sky and abducts all the adults. As the new oldest member of her fragmented community, she must set out to solve this great mystery. Little does she know of the grand adventure before her, the evil lurking in the shadows, and the role she would play in the fight for Earth's very existence. Purnell, tell us about this one.
Well, Ornitopia can best be described as a game made by some dude who, or dudes and dudettes or folks who really, really like Zelda 2, The Adventure of Link, and said, we can do more with that.
Well, I'm sold.
Honestly, I wasn't expecting what I got, but I'm happy with it.
I heard Chris turn his Switch on over his microphone. He's going to going to buy this one now.
Like, World Traversal is literally a love letter to Zelda 2. So when you start the game, you're in your little hub village, your little village, and you're tasked with a very simple quest of going out and finding your siblings to bring them home for dinner. And then when you leave the village, you open up to a map that is pretty much top down, little tiny sprite man, girl walking around, and all the locations can be accessible by walking up to them on this map and pressing OK. But of course, monsters occasionally pop up that can initiate battle with you, and they come in the form of, well, if you play Zelda 2, you'll already know, little jelly monsters for weak encounters, or red bats that fly after you for strong encounters. Strong being like the monsters are a little tougher, or you might find like a stronger variant of a monster in these fights. And when you get into a fight, it's a 2D like plane that you can run around on, like left to right, and you can either fight the enemies there to try to like hopefully get some money out of them or some food, which I'll talk about in a few. Or if you're like, I can't handle this fight, you can just walk off the side of the screen and abandon the fight and keep moving. When you get to other, like, particularly larger areas, it could be either a dungeon or just an explorable region. It's still a 2D side scroller, but there's like elevation involved. Like, you know, there's like platforms you can hop around on, general exploration tactics, including like doors you can go into to go into like different areas of a stage and whatnot. Combat consists of primarily physical swing attack, where you get like a melee, like bat weapon, but you do upgrade that throughout the game to stronger variants of a bat. And you can charge it up for a stronger swing, which does more damage, but like Souls, because I want to say that because it's been the theme of the episode in a very Souls-like thing. I know it's not truly, but you know what I mean. There is a stamina gauge in this game where every time you attempt to fall a melee strike or use one of your special wet items, the stamina gauge will go down a little bit. And eventually, if you overdo it, your character will get tired and become unable to fight back until it recharges. In addition to that, sometimes the stamina gauge, like if you just kind of let it chill instead of burning it all the way out, it'll start to kind of like, it has like a kind of like how like a Street Fighter game would be, where it has like that little like a darker color to the meter that once it fills that part up, the rest of the gauge will ultimately start to fill up again. So like if you can hold off, your meter will fill up quicker than if you let it expire. So it's like a little bit of a workout there. You're going to expire this meter a lot, and it's going to piss you off until you upgrade it by collecting energy gems that are hidden throughout the game, which will extend your energy meter. There's also like heart containers, which you can extend your health meter, like Zelda, which is fine, though, because that's a fun mechanic, and you'll be on your way. So the game is honestly very, very large. I spent an early chunk of the game being truly lost. And if you don't get lost like me, that means you're better at following cues. So what I'm basically going to tell you here is that you need to pay attention to what people tell you in the game. And if someone says, go check for this person or there's a store in this area, try to remember that, because you might need to go to that store. And there's no quest log in the game, nor is there a map in the game that you can just review when you feel like it. So you need to know this shit and apply yourself. Lest you find yourself wandering to figure out what the hell the next thing is you're supposed to do. And for the record, quests do kind of stack on top of each other too. So like you might be told you need to accomplish quest A, but in order to accomplish quest A, you need item B, but you can't get item B because you're lacking access to C, and you can't get into C because you need an item that you get from D. So it's like there's a lot of that stuff that can end up building itself out as you talk to villagers and towns that you visit and get set out on quests, because to be honest with you, though the game starts out with the aliens coming and getting weird with your town, you quickly find yourself being inundated with other quests related to other towns and hardships, because, well, that's what heroes do. They save their friends and they save, you know, spoiled jackasses or whatever. There's a lot of cool equipment you can find in the game, too. Fairly typical Zelda-y stuff, mind you. You know, bombs, slingshots, whatever. But just because it's typical Zelda-y stuff doesn't mean it's not fun to get in this game, too. And there's a lot of charm to be had in this game, because the graphics in motion and in still form are very adorable and quite endearing. Every time you start a game file up, the main character is asleep, and you have to actually press the button to wake her up, and she does a stretch and yawn. Like, ah!
That's cute.
It is. It's so adorable. It's like, oh my god, this little girl is so ready to adventure. This is great. The dialogue is very well written in the game. I do enjoy the chuckles from it. The only real gripes I've had about it, though, this it could go either way for a person, is that combat can get rough. And what I mean by that is, so when Gale swings her club, there it's not like instant. Like, it's a slight delay. But it's enough of the delay that when you're trying to aim at a warthog that's charging at you full speed ahead and you're trying to hit him as he's coming at you, it's a little harder to time that than I would like. And that goes from normal swings and charge swings. In addition, you get an aerial attack as well, but for the life of me, I never mastered the timing on hitting aerial things with my aerial strike. It was usually getting lucky to do it. So I couldn't rely on that. I ultimately started relying on the slingshot once I got it to hit things that are in the air. I was like, if I don't have to, I'm not going to do it. Screw it. Despite that, I'm going to be honest. I've had fun with that game. It's even with the frustration I have with the combat, it'd be nice if they could freaking patch that somehow. despite the combat issue, I still enjoy the game very much. It's a large and fulfilling quest. You'll spend easily over 20 to 30 hours on this game, I believe.
Nice. So,
and honestly, if you think you're better than that, prove it. otherwise, I think you'll spend a fair amount of time on this game. And given the price tag on it, I think that's a pretty fair assessment.
Your verdict then? Official verdict for $20?
This is one of those surprise and unexpected buys in my registry because it was interesting looking at the store, and I was like, well, I don't have time, but maybe if I can get a review for it. And sure enough, there it is. And I think this game is a worthy addition to the Switch. It's a lot of fun.
Awesome. Sounds good. Next game to talk about is called Arcadius Revolution, developed by Broke Studio, published by Megacat Studio, available at megacatstudios.com for $49.99 with the game and box, or $39.99 for the cart only. Arcadius Revolution is an arcade-style top-down shooter for the Sega Genesis Mega Drive with Mode 7-style rotation. Hop into the ship and save Arcadius with the 68,000 heart on fire. Speedrunners, rejoice. We have a unique challenge for you. Chris, this is a legit, honest to God Sega Genesis game. Yes?
Yes.
Tell us about it.
Oh, I have to do that, huh?
Yeah, kind of.
Okay, so Arcadius Revolution. Well, I actually played through this game on my own stream. So,
ooh, anybody's interested
in that? Actually, went good. I beat it, and then I played through some of it on hard mode as well. So, if anybody is interested in seeing that VOD, then I have that posted in the chat. Basically, Arcadius Revolution is, so it's like, it is a shmup or shoot 'em up, but it actually, which I've already explained what that is through Beaker Reloaded. something is my way here. It's in this unusual like subgenre of the greater genre in that it is a rotating shoot 'em up. So that is basically like Thunder Force 2, I believe, which has some levels are heavy rotating like around. It doesn't actually rotate the screen though, like you actually turn just the ship. But this one turns the entire stage.
Is this like the top down sections in Contra 3?
That is exactly what I would compare it to.
Nice.
Yes.
Nice.
However, this runs way better. I mean, of course, it has the benefit of like almost 30 years of, you know, of the system being out. So, you know, like there's been some time to improve on the old ways. But yeah, the thing that struck me the first about this game, first and foremost, is how smooth it is. It is like a silky game. Like when you're rotating stuff, you're just like, oh yeah, this is, you know, you want to like turn your baseball cap around and say, now this is blast processing, you know, lift your sunglasses up, all this stuff. It really does seem to like fully utilize what the Genesis can do. Another thing that, like, you know, just speaking of the bells and whistles and stuff, like, I noticed that it has like some like polygon 3D action going on in the intro. It has digitized voice acting throughout. Like most of the lines of dialogue are actually spoken. And even though, of course, like the Genesis, that does sound a little fuzzy, like it is nowhere, like it's so much better than a lot of what, you know, like full retail games were back in the day. So it was actually pretty impressive. Like I said, you know, the story is a story. It's, you know, you're in a ship and you gotta, like, you're just running various missions to try and take down the bad guy. And then eventually take down the bad guy. Every stage, like, well, at least the first three stages, introduces a new weapon that you can switch to. And those weapons are needed not only to, you know, defeat enemies, but also to explore the levels. See, the game has a little bit of an exploration mechanic to it. You're actually going through levels and, like, trying to figure out, you know, how to basically get to the next section. And, you know, there is actually a map, and interestingly, it is mapped to... Okay, so actually, I'm getting ahead of myself, because this game basically requires... If you're playing it on a Genesis, it does require the six-button controller, because... you've got one button for shoot, you know, by default it's B, and then A and C are your rotating buttons, which is great because that means that while you're rotating, you've got the shooting button right there. Plus there's a mode where you can toggle on permanent auto shoot, which is very nice. So like the other thing is that it maps the sub weapons to the X, Y, and Z buttons, so that you can switch to them very quickly, because there's only three sub weapons available, and you know, you can switch to them immediately instead of having to scroll, which I really don't like scrolling through things in shooters.
No.
For the obvious reason that, you know, you gotta be like on top of that stuff. The actual mode button, which is where it's on the right shoulder of the controller, is used to pull up a map. So the levels are actually mapped out. It's a like nice little like old school looking kind of laser map. So you can actually like kind of tell where you're going and like map out, you know, your course and stuff. Now, the one thing is that the map does not feature any kind of zoom out or moving the map without actually moving in the game. So it really is just kind of like taking what you can see and then multiplying it to, you know, so where you can see like the walls around you basically.
No.
But I found it very useful because, yeah, sometimes it's not very obvious where you need to go. And the only indication is that once you're there, you'll see a green arrow pointing to a thing and you're like, oh, that's where I go. And then it's stage over. So, yeah, it's basically like rotating around. Enemies are, you know, the kind of usual thing. You've got your little tanks that shoot your one shot. You've got these much more aggressive fighter planes that kind of fly at you while they're shooting at you. And so you got to kind of back up and, you know, make some room. It's nice to be able to use things like doorways and stuff to your advantage. Like if you go through a door, some of them open automatically. Some of them have to be blasted open. But the ones that open and close, you can actually like use that to bridge a gap, you know, put a gap between you and the enemy so that you can kind of get them when they come around the corner and things like that. Like you can use the environment as part of your strategy, which is really cool. And then, yeah, the bosses are like the bosses in Contra 3. They are usually set up to where you have a limited, you know, room that you get to run around, and it's a lot of strafing and like trying to keep away from them while, you know, basically constantly rotating the screen. So if Mode 7 style rotating makes you ill, then this is not the game for you, because by the time I got to the last boss, I was just like, oh man, even I was starting to get a little bit like getting that merry-go-round feeling, you know?
Yeah.
So, but yeah, like I said, the bells and whistles on this are good. Art style is a little weird. All the characters have strangely big eyes. Like as soon as I saw a human character, and you can actually see it in the VOD, because I literally like everything in the VOD is like me reacting to it for the first time. And the first time I saw a person, I was like, whoa. But that's okay. Like I said, it's a very good looking game. I found it basically, you know, full disclosure, I'm not a fan of the rotating shmup, like, you know, the ones where you have to turn the ship around. I have Dragon Strike on the NES. I have Thunder Force 2. And neither of them were very good to me. This game kind of changed all that for me. I actually had a lot of fun with this one.
So. Well, then overall, $40 for a cartridge, $50 for the whole shebang with the box and manual. What do you think of this one?
I mean, it's a new Genesis game. That's how much they cost.
Yeah.
It is worth it. Yeah, you get like, where did I put the box? Dang it. Well, I've already lost the box. No, here it is.
Proud of you. Thank you. I'm sure Megacat is going to listen to this and be like, that son of a bitch. Like, they send us a cartridge and you go and lose the box already.
I didn't lose the box already. No, it's a, well, so what you get, of course, you get the hard shell plastic Genesis case, which I believe you did an unboxing of this, right?
Yes, I did. So you could check our channel to see an unboxing of the full package.
Yes, yeah, so definitely check out that. The highlights to me is the fact that the plastic case actually has a hang tab on it.
Yes.
It has a 27-page color book that describes the entire game for you and how to do everything. Oh, yeah, and there's a keyboard and mouse option, which I was a little confused by because I didn't know that that keyboards and mice... Well, I know that there's a mouse for the Genesis, but I was assuming this may be for, like, if you were... Like, if this was a software game as well, like a software-only kind of thing, but I don't know.
I have no clue.
Yeah, I don't know. There's also, like, some really technical stuff in this manual I didn't understand, but whatever. It's also really interesting to see a Twitter link in a paper instruction book for a Genesis game. I will say that much. But no, like, all the stuff that comes with it is good. I think it's a worthwhile game. The only thing I will say is that... unless you're playing it on the harder difficulties or intend to speedrun it, it's not a super long game. That's actually kind of a theme for a lot of my games today, is shortness. You know, like I said, I got through the game in like an hour and a half, and that was on a low difficulty, and then I cranked the difficulty up, and I was like, okay, yeah, this is much more intense. But, you know, it's five stages in the game itself, so... It really is a game that's meant to be played over and over again on the, you know, highest difficulty that you can stand. And, of course, going back through and speedrunning it. So,
and to play the GDQ next year.
Yeah.
Alongside Mortal Shell's Naked Run.
Exactly. Yeah. Now's my chance. Just got to get good.
Do it, Chris. Do it.
But yeah, no, I would say it's a buy it. What I most appreciate about this game is that it perfectly utilizes modern quality of life in something that is this old school. And like, I really, as a lifelong Genesis fan, I was very impressed with what they were able to get on this cart, like in terms of like the graphics and the voice acting. Oh, and the music's really good too. It's very bassy and very, you know, got like dual wheedly needly guitars and stuff like that. Again, not like way in your face or anything like that, but I definitely was having fun with the soundtrack too. And awesome. So, yeah, I like this game. This is a really good one. So I'd say great job, Megacat, and go out and buy this if you can.
Awesome. All right. Next game to talk about is called Griffin Knight Epic Definitive Edition, developed and published by Cyber Rhino Studios, released August 20th on Xbox One, Switch, and PS4 for $12.99. Griffin Knight Epic is a 2D medieval shoot-em-up that mixes elements from classical shoot-em-ups, exploration, and duel-like boss battles. It tells the story of Sir Oliver and Akia, an accomplished knight and his loyal griffin that are forced back to adventure once again. Cole, tell us about this one.
Oh, it's my turn.
Yes, it's your turn. Welcome back. How are you doing?
Yeah. How was the show?
You can chime in more. You're more than welcome to talk during other reviews.
I know, I was actually just hanging out listening because I was doing some work on homeschooling shit for tomorrow.
You're playing Horizon, aren't you?
I am not. I wish I was, but I am doing homeschooling shit right now.
She's playing Horizon.
If Ooblets. I were playing Horizon, I'd be streaming. Duh. But no, Griffin Knight Epic is not Horizon Zero Dawn. Instead, it is sort of like a shmup in that you control Sir Oliver and his trusty steed, which is a griffin named Akila. And basically what has happened is Sir Oliver lives in Valiant Skies Kingdom. And a horrible ass dragon has come and destroyed all the shit. Because that's what dragons do in these type of fantasy games. And because the dragon has destroyed all the shit, it's up to our hero to go and slay the dragon. Which he does. But then he discovers that all of the dragon's shit has been plundered by other people. And that's not cool. And the only thing that's left is this amulet, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But the amulet sucks and it doesn't do anything. So we think it actually causes a nightmare where Sir Oliver sees like a shadow version of himself. Okay? And that shadow version of himself kicks your ass. I thought for sure I was doing something wrong because this is your first introduction to a boss battle. And I was like, why am I dying to this motherfucker? And it's because you're supposed to. He is too strong for you. And he is too strong for you because you don't have the weapons that were plundered by all the other heroes who didn't actually slay the dragon. So now you have to go out and find those heroes and reclaim the weapons that they have taken, which means you gotta go kick their asses. This plays out in that you have a map, and as you choose different people to go after and defeat, more than become available to you. There are 9 total, I believe it is. I know that the definitive edition has added a new one.
Yep.
And I'll get into why I don't know the total number here properly in a second. When you go into each level, before you start each level, you can get, go to a marketplace and purchase potions and things like that to help you out. I definitely recommend the invincibility potion for some of the levels, cause holy fuck. There are a couple times I wouldn't have made it without that bad boy. When you do choose a level, you have the opportunity to choose the difficulty for that level. So you don't have to do them all on easy if you don't want to do them all on easy. If you want to be like, well, I did one on easy and it was super easy, so I'm going to try it on normal or higher because I'm apparently some kind of magic badass, which I was not. Then you can choose each level's difficulty and go back and replay them. It's all well and good. There's no punishment for that in any kind of way. I think it's actually nice that it does that and lets you go back and replay them. Although, of course, you only get the weapon once. But you can go back and replay them and try to find secrets and things like that. The levels play out as like a shmup. But because you're flying on the griffin, there's a couple of quirks to the controls. The griffin can go forward and backward. And given that Akila can move backward, you have to be able to turn her around. And in order to do that, instead of just like being able to flick back on the D-pad or on the thumbstick to have her rotate around and turn the other way, if you do that, she's just going to back up. And then you find yourself getting hit in the back because you backed that ass up into a B and it's now fucking you up.
Because enemies attack from both sides in this game.
They do. And from the bottom, they don't give a fuck. They'll come from all over the place. So what you have to actually do is use your triggers, left and right trigger, to rotate whether you're going forward or back. I don't know why, but this is the most insanely difficult thing for me to learn ever.
Really?
I cannot adjust to hitting the triggers, and I would give anything for a mode that just lets me hit back and flip and turn around. I'd rather constantly be turning back and forth.
Pretty sure you can hit the B button too.
I think you can, but still, I just can't adjust to having to hit an extra button other than just turning around when I hit back. I don't know why. That is 100% a me thing.
That's just how shmups are. If you,
I'm sure. No, I don't know. I play a lot of them that only go forward. Apparently, because I can't adjust to it. It's me. And I'm fully aware of that, and I'm not holding that against the game in any way. What I will hold against the game is that when I got into the fourth level, I broke it.
Oh, God, what'd you do?
Let me get the actual proper name of the level it was. I was going against... I can't pronounce this. What the fuck? Dawid Melek, which is one of the enemies I was going after. It's the fourth level I did. It's maybe the sixth one that becomes available. I was doing fine, cruising along. When you get to the end of a scene, you have options where you can like go up, down, left, right, right? Whatever's available for that specific scene. So then, I had went up. I had cleared out some of the enemies. I was on the second phase, I want to say. Maybe the third. I had done quite a bit. I had beat a mini boss and was carrying on from there. And then I had continued to beat a few enemies after the mini boss. And then it was like, well, the only option you do is go back the way you came or go up, right? So I went up, defeated a few more enemies, and then got to the top. And it never gave me the option to go anywhere else. It was just it. It was like blank screen, me flying around, no enemies, nowhere to go, nothing. Couldn't go up, couldn't go left, couldn't go right, couldn't go down.
Weird.
Now, I backed out. I restarted the level. I got to the same spot, and I did it again. I could back out. I could start another level and lose my progress and go to like another enemy to fight and carry on. But for whatever it is, that one specific level, I could not get it to progress. I broke it hardcore.
Maybe it's a known glitch. We'll have to check in with the devs and see if that might be a known glitch. Have you seen anyone else report it? Have you checked at all?
I couldn't find anything else about anybody else complaining about it. So
you broke the game.
We all know that if a game has anything that can break it, I'm the one that will do it. And so some way, somehow, I broke it. And at the very least, I need to sit down here and be honest and go, I broke it. Because somebody else could say, oh, well, she had a great time with the game. I bought it. Now it's broke. No, I broke it. I definitely did it. There is something that needs to be worked out here. I'm always willing to reach out to devs and be like, hey, I broke your shit. Sorry. But because in the interest of time, I had to review this tonight. And so here we are. I broke it and haven't had a chance to reach out yet. But I will follow up with that.
Yeah, and we'll give an update. We can give an update next week and see if we hear anything. But as it stands right now, $13 on it. What do you think of it?
It's $13 and it's on sale, actually, if I'm not mistaken. It might be. I seem to think it had a launch sale.
It is on sale. It's showing for me save $6.50, so I think it might be save half off.
Yeah. So it's like $8 or whatever. Yeah, it's glitched for me at least. A lot of other people seem to not have had any trouble with it. I'm willing to go with a recommended try it. Just know that there's the potential for it to have an issue. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I can give an update later if I find out that it's being fixed or whatever, or that there's a patch in the works, which is usually the case. So I'm not like going to say write it off. Well, because I had a glitch and I couldn't progress, but it is something that you need to follow through on.
Yeah.
Which is fair. It's fine. Yeah.
But again, the Definitive Edition features one new stage with a brand new boss, sub-boss, rune, weapon, and achievements, and jump-in, jump-out local co-op.
Yes. That is one thing that, too, I wish I had had a chance to try. That's one thing I didn't check, is if co-op affected where it was broken. I was playing alone, but maybe if I had clicked in another controller if it had done it. That's something I'll have to check out later.
Yeah. Oh, well, we'll figure it out.
Yeah.
We'll always update. If we hear anything, we will give an update. But moving on, next game to talk about is called Quaidon, Azuma Manor Story, developed by Deco and Gudoan, published by Rainy Frog, released August 20th on the Switch for $24.99. Explore an old Japanese manor rigged with traps and puzzles and overrun with Yoki, combining 3D horror action with point-and-click adventure. Chris, tell us about Quaidon.
Okay. I will.
What are you breaking?
I was looking at something. That was just my fingernail clippers. But since they're on my desk, which is where my microphone is, you know, it made a much louder sound in the microphone than it did in real life. By the way, I need to issue a correction on my last review.
Oh no.
I was just looking in the instruction books and there is a 3-button mode in this game. It's just where you, instead of using the XYZ buttons to choose weapons, you have to pause it and then choose the weapon while it's paused and then unpause it.
Yeah.
But why you would be playing a new Genesis game in the year of our Lord 2020 without a 6-button controller, I have no idea.
Very true.
Also, apparently the mouse and keyboard, there is a Genesis mouse. They mean for you to actually adapt your own keyboard for this game, and they have like soldering instructions at the end of the instruction book. So good luck with that. They just tell you where to put the pins, basically. So that's no wonder that was something that didn't make any sense to me when I was looking at it. I was like, a Genesis keyboard? Anyway,
Quaidon.
Yeah, Quaidon. Okay, so the Quaidon Azuma Manor story is a this is an interesting one because it is a kind of an action game with strong puzzle elements that will remind you of something like a Resident Evil, like a classic Resident Evil, or like a Silent Hill. In fact, when you first boot up the game, they give you the option to either have cel-shaded modern graphics, well, modern is in quotation marks, with, like, direct control, like if you, with the left stick, so, you know, you run around with the left stick and it runs you around, you know, like a Dark Souls or something, or literally any other game, but I don't know, I feel like calling out Dark Souls.
Like we need to.
Or you can actually have it do like more old school style graphics and it gives you tank controls.
Oh.
I was like, who would choose tank controls?
What sadistic bastard wants that?
I know. I was like,
baby.
And that's the only thing. The tank controls are the only thing in this game that's truly horrifying. Because while it does kind of seem to market itself as like a horror game, it's not really. I mean, nothing jumped out at me. Nothing was like gross and gory or anything like that. It's just a nice, like, it's a ghost story. I mean, there's, you know, it's got yokai in it, which they spell as Yoki. And I don't know that that's how it's supposed to be, like Yoki. I always thought it was supposed to be Yokai.
I know that's what threw me off. I don't know if they're using their own special name for it for a reason or what.
Yeah, I was like Googling Yoki and it just comes up with like Japanese restaurants. So I'm like, okay, I think what they mean is yokai because that's what's in here. I don't know that that's an alternate spelling or something
root
like
beer
that.
Me, but I used to own a tank. Okay. Oh, yeah. The root beer wants tank controls.
All right. Well, this is the perfect game for you. It's a buy it for root beer. Let's talk about it for everyone else, though. Okay, so you play as the game basically has you training. You're a lady named Haruka, who is training with Shiro, her mentor, and they're both I forget the word for it, but it's basically they're ghost hunters. They're yokai hunters, and you know that means training with a spear and a couple other weapons that we'll get to in a second. And then this giant ass yokai appears, and it's like one of those kinds that's like a big giant worm, but it's got like a monstery face, kind of like a demon horse or something like that. It's hard to describe. It's just when you see it, you're like, oh, it's a Japanese monster. And you know, the game, as soon as it teaches you how to like run around and like attack and things like that, and you know, how to pick up items and everything. It then has you fight this thing as Shiro, who, of course, he's a master yokai hunter of some kind. So it's a very easy tutorial fight. But once you win, then Earthworm Jim like places a curse on Shiro and turns him into a little frog. And so you play through the game as Haruka, the student now turned master, and her master, who is now a frog, rides around on your shoulder and gives you advice and like lore. So I'm like, this is like easily the most convenient like way to get plot and like subtext and exposition in a game. Just literally turn the guy that knows everything on Earth into a frog and have him ride around on your shoulder talking to you.
Telling like, well you everything. Done. That's
yeah.
I'll do it.
So yeah, exactly. Cricket
transformation sequence.
Do what?
That Jiminy Cricket transformation sequence.
Right. So you and Jiminy Croquet go around the So they are placed near a conveniently haunted mansion that is occupied by a family who also used to be yokai hunters in their time, but now their house has been overrun by yokai, and basically the game has you going through the different various parts of this big old mansion and its underground and secret passages and like all this other stuff, trying to locate the different members of the family, and then ultimately face off against Earthworm Jim in a rematch. So it basically, like I said, if you've played an old school, like kind of horror game with tank controls, then you'll recognize some of the things in this game. For instance, that you have to look around, and the game is interesting in the sense that you move around with the left stick, right? And the right stick is actually to control a mouse cursor, literally a mouse cursor that you can't get rid of. It's always on the screen. But with that mouse, you can, with the cursor, you can basically pixel hunt until it becomes a hand, and then you can use the right trigger as literally a left click to pick up things and put them in your inventory, for which there's 8 slots. And to save your game, you actually have to pick up an item and give it to a Buddha statue. So,
It's like ink ribbons all over again.
Right. And literally the game has you doing the oldest trope in video games. That is, you have to find the red key for the red door and the blue key for the blue door. And they're literally red keys and blue keys. Fortunately, I mean, some of the puzzles are a little more advanced than that. But, you know, it's between that and the action is basically where the meat of the gameplay is. So as far as the action goes, you have an extremely slow walk, which this is a game that has optional tank control, so that's what could be expected. You also have a run button, of course, and you can run infinitely, so that's nice. So you have 3 different kinds of attacks. You basically start the game with 3 different weapons. One, and they all have Japanese names that I can't remember. So one is basically your spear. That is your medium thrusty weapon. So that's the one you mostly use. If an enemy is, you know, your size or larger, or, you know, just located in the middle of you, then you can stab it with a spear. For lower enemies or enemies that are popping out of the ground, which happens, you have, I'm just going to call it like a magic bomb. Like you basically do this thing and like it explodes a thing on the ground, and that takes care of the enemy there. Does a good amount of damage, but it can only, its area of effect is only low to the ground. And then you have the magic mirror, which I think actually is just called a magic mirror, even though it's more like a flashlight. But you basically hold it up above you, above her head, and it will take care of enemies that are trying to swoop down on you, for instance. There's an enemy early on that's like basically a flying monkey, and it is very, very hard to beat, even with that thing. You have to time it, where she's like going, blah! Because the bomb and the magic mirror both use basically your magic bar. And, you know, that's... So you only have limited uses on that until you get it refilled. So therefore, you know, it can become a little complicated when you're trying to, you know, make a whole lot of progress at once. So yeah, it's all about like kind of strategizing which, and you know, the weapons have to be scrolled through before you can get to the right one. And you have like the icon for them is so tiny. They're just like located right next to your life bar. Like, you just have to go with the colored background, basically. Like, okay, red's my medium weapon, yellow is my high weapon, and green is my low weapon. Which is not how a traffic light works. So, I know, but they chose red, yellow, and green, and didn't put them in the right order. so anyways, basically, yeah, you just, you run through, and when it, you know, the game involves, like I said, you know, you're rescuing people from these ghosts, which, you know, include my favorite yokai, which I always come into these reviews with yokai games without having, the names of any of them, but Kasa Obake is my favorite one. That's the umbrella with one leg and a, and an eye that jumps at you.
Oh, Jesus.
That's in here, so that checks my list. And, you know, that's the cool thing is that, you know, the regular enemies, they're just kind of your typical, like, you know, okay, I get what this is. I've seen this in other things. I actually really like the bosses. One of the bosses that you fight is a spider with a bull head. So that's okay. Kinda cool. Yeah. But you know, that the way that fight goes is that you have like this circle that you can't leave, and this thing is like almost half the size of that circle, so it just ends up with you running around in a circle and turning around to hit it when you can, you know, like a twin stick shooter or something. So but it's an earlier boss, so but yeah, basically, like I said, it's all about, it's kind of like, it's a horror game without the horror, which is interesting because, you know, like I said, I did not see anything in this game that I found, you know, anything above like a parental guidance suggested kind of, you know, horror. Like no. Sometimes people get a little bloodied up. But, you know, as you rescue people, I mean, they're all okay. So you don't like stumble into like some rotting corpse or anything like that, as far as I can tell. Maybe that's a secret in the game or something.
Maybe
it's, yeah,
it is only like T-rated, so it's not going to be super okay. Gory or anything.
Yeah, no, it's really not. It's very tame. So combat is a little tricky because you do have to like be scrolling through whatever weapons you can find. The puzzles aren't too frustrating. Like I said, it's largely find a thing and interact with a thing, and you know, there's nothing that's so hard that your frog friend won't explain it to you. And you know, it's all about like kind of finding out things about this family that you keep rescuing. And again, it's you're trying to get your frog friend back into his old man mode. I don't actually know if he's old because when you see him as a person, he's got a mask that obscures his entire face, which you then get for like fighting and stuff like that. Like she actually only has her actual face out for like cutscenes and stuff like that. Mostly she has that mask with the horns on it.
See, even in video games, wear a mask, people.
Yeah, exactly. It's a good social distancing game.
So $25 on this one. Is it worth telling people to wear a mask?
I mean, like for $25, I think it's a good game. I think that it might be a little on the short side for that much. However, I do appreciate what's been put into it. You know, aesthetically, it's interesting. It has an old school style, but like I said, if you put it in modern mode, then it's cel shaded. It really is just kind of like a Resident Evil light kind of romp. And the one thing that's interesting about it is that I like music when it's there. It's there for bosses, but then sometimes it's just not there. Like when you're walking around, there's just no soundtrack. So, you know, it's hard to recommend at $24.99. I'd put it at a recommended try it. But, you know, if it
hits a sale, jump on it.
Yeah, I think if it hits a sale, it's worth checking out for sure. It's fun, so I quite like it. I was not a fan of Resident Evil back in the day, and certainly tank controls have no charm for me. But, you know, for Root Beer is my jam, though. It is a buy it because it has tank controls.
All right, sounds good. Yeah. Next game is called Dungeon Scavenger, developed and published by Vidama Software, released August 21st on Xbox One for $8.99. Dungeon Scavenger is a unique turn-based old-school dungeon crawler that sets you on a challenging path of exploration. Select a hero to keep the threat of the dungeon and demon realms away from the townspeople with an innovative combat system, and you save the town from the danger below. Pernell, we had an interview with this one on the last episode. You're taking a look at the game. What did you think of it?
Well, the way a person will feel about this game will largely involve how forgiving they are for some of the game's potential shortcomings. But the game has some, I'll say it has some bite to it if you're willing to give it a chance. So let's get into actually discussing the game proper, though. So the idea behind this game is it's a typical base layout for like a dungeon crawler, which is that a town is being besieged by monsters. The lord of the town wants you to investigate underground to see what the heck all the hubbub is about. So in you go to figure shit out. You choose at the beginning of the game one of a variety of different classes. And each of those classes comes with it, brings with it its own like base stats and some base skills that the job will have and a variety of perks. For example, my favorite character, which is also the hardest character to play as that I've used of all the ones I chose so far, was the sorceress. The sorceress, her base perk when she starts the game is she always has the ability to teleport, which she can phase through walls and stuff like that. But it burns through her stamina gauge like nobody's business to do. So that's just an example of that. So the idea is that when you start the game, you're given the base quest, which is to go underground and find the remains of the last adventuring party. And when you go down there, you officially enter your first, you know, dungeon layout. The thing I do like how the dungeons work in this game, though, admittedly. The way dungeons work in this game is that it's like a bit of a paper scroll that's on the screen, and each room is just a small square, like basically you're looking at a map, essentially. You're not walking anywhere. You're looking at a map. And on the map, each room is represented by a square. And you are able to choose which cardinal direction, north, south, east, or west, you want to go on this grid to progress on your quest to the dungeon layout. Now, there are a few things that can exist in one of these rooms. It could be a question mark, which pertains to an unknown event. And when you step on that question mark, a variety of different events could play out. And typically, these events will involve a pretty nifty, like, art image.
You want to know what else is nifty, Purnell?
Root beer's my jam!
No, Vertically Impaired, who just subbed for his 30th month.
Fucking yeah!
Mugga muggas. Apparently,
30. You must have
Dodger scavenger, chief.
30! That's crazy. No, isn't that crazy, Purnell?
Fucking yeah!
Yeah, that's right, Purnell.
Damn it! Like, what are you talking about? I think it's pretty... Oh, is that other...
How person? About you, Purnell? Isn't that cool? I was actually waiting for you this time.
Damn it! You got me! I'm all like, I know what he's doing. I know what's happening. I'm just gonna let other Nell handle it.
You're gonna let other Purnell handle it? Take it away, Purnell.
Fucking yeah!
That's right, yeah. Purnell. Anyway, Dungeon Scavenger. So, Omar's gonna hear this. He's gonna be like, these fucking people, jeez. Oh, wait, I was on the show. I know how stupid it is. Yeah, I get it. I get it. I understand.
So when you walk up onto a random event, you'll get treated to like a decent image on the screen, like a cool art image. Descriptive text.
I love the artwork for those images. I think they got some really stellar artwork. For Cole, I know you like talking about that artwork.
Yeah, it was really lovely. It's very high fantasy, and it's digitally illustrated. I was actually looking at the portfolio for the artist after playing the game, because when we did the interview, and he mentioned the artist's name, I believe it was, and I actually found their portfolio, and I was like, that's fucking awesome.
Yeah, the artwork is very solid in this game.
Yeah.
Like those like images go. So when you get that, you get the image, you get the descriptive of what the event is in the room, and then you get a variety of choices. Sometimes it's like two, sometimes it's three. Sometimes it's three choices with one or more blocked out. And those blocked choices are dependent on usually if something related to your character. So to give a base example, you might walk into a room with some goblins. The goblins are, you know, basically saying, hey, man, we're hungry here. One more, you know, arm for the pyre here. What are you going to do for us? And the game, like, do you want to try to fight them? Do you want to try to run away? Or do you want to kind of just barrel over them? But the barrel over option would involve you needing to have heavy armor on. And if you don't have heavy armor, that option becomes blacked out, so you can't even use it. Of course, there's, like, generally options related to all the classes. So for one hand, you might come across a room where maybe like, man, I wish I had heavy armor for this. But then later on, you'll come across a room where it's like, whew, good thing I have light armor. And that will allow you to utilize that action there. But typically, there's a lot of scenarios like that where it could be like making a choice. Sometimes you'll have like a gambling option. You might have to roll the dice and pay money if you screw up, blah, blah. So it's like there's a variety of different things that you can do in those events. Other things that can come across are treasure chests that could have, you know, items in it, usually enchanted items. But there's always a percentage chance that the chest is booby-trapped, and you have the option of either rolling the dice and trying to open the chest anyway, or using a chest key, which will allow you to bypass the trap. And once you open it, you could take damage, but you'll always know where the item is as long as you, you know, survive the damage if you take it. And the last thing you'll typically come across are monsters, usually of the base monster or a heavily strengthened, too strong for words monsters. And when you get into that, that's when like the meat and potatoes of the game kicks in, which is generally the combat. So combat in this game, honestly, this is where it gets a little weird for me. So you get a monster image on the screen. They will tell you, you know, the type of monster and amount of hit points it's got. And then there's like dialogue at the top where you can kind of scroll up to it and then click it. And it tells you like what kind of attack that monster is going to do and like what augmentation it has. Well, like, for example, fighting a monster is like he's going to hit you for 3 damage, but he's also going to hit you with stone damage. So you'll take like, you know, a certain amount of damage for each turn. And it'll even tell you like certain like resistances that you might have to it. It lays out on the table pretty much the entire breakdown for what the monsters are going to do. And then you have to choose amongst your options what you're going to do to counter it. You have physical attacks, which is like just your base melee attack. You have magic abilities, which is dependent on the type of class you picked usually. And then, of course, whatever level that class is, because sometimes you'll learn skill abilities when you level up. And also skills. Skills are, again, just kind of like that. Like it's not magic, but it's a skill. All these things have various traits to them. Like sometimes you might poison a guy, you might reduce resistances or defenses, all these things. And of course, they'll also do damage. The interesting thing about this, though, is that there is no magic points and there's no skill points when you cast or utilize these abilities. So it really does boil down to what gives you the most bang for your buck in that particular bit of combat. Once you chose your attack, it goes into the strong process of actually running that attack. The attack will play out. The enemy will damage you. You'll damage the enemy, and then you'll return to make another selection in the game. As you win combats, you will level up your character and get more experience points. And upon level ups, you will get the ability to spend skill points on a variety of different, like, not abilities per se, but just like, I guess, standard traits for your guy. Like, for example, you might have a character as a wizard who gets the ability to double cast, which is casting 2 spells in one go. And you can spend some of those skill points to increase the odds of you getting a double cast on a battle. Or, you know, just various other like perks. Or it can even just be basic things like, hey, now you get more magic fortitude or you get more magic attack. You just choose what you spend them on. And there's also an additional tree on the side where as you level up, it'll put a dot node into it. And as you get past certain thresholds, you'll get either some stat bonuses or a new ability or a new skill, what have you. And you just kind of notice it as it happens. Like, okay, it's time. I got my new skill. This is great. When you are running through the dungeon, depending on your character that you chose, you might lose some hit points. Not hit points, sorry. You might lose some stamina on each step. Or you might lose some stamina based on certain actions or whatever. But ultimately, you're going to get tired. No matter how you slice it, everyone gets tired sometime. And when that happens, you have options. You can either use a ration to take a break and regain your stamina and your health. Or you can drink root beer, because for some reason, well, I forgot. I guess root beer is our jam.
Is our jam, yeah.
Had to say it. You can use root beer to regain some of your stamina as an item. Root beers, you can carry more of that. Rations, you can only carry about 3 at a time, so you got to be a little bit more frugal with those things, especially as you get deeper into the dungeon proper. But if you run out of stamina, every step you take will take hit points until it eventually kills you, so don't run out of stamina. While you're back in town, you have some basic options available to you there. You can go to a weapon shop or an item shop, both of which sells you various resources you can use on your pilgrimage. You can go to the inn to take on quests, and the quests will usually have a request for fulfill this obligation, but if you fulfill this obligation, you'll get a reward. All the quests are randomized, though, so once you play the game, it's just basically busy work for while you're in the dungeon that could potentially lead to rewards. So there's no reason not to take a quest, but you might find yourself sometimes getting a quest where it's like, I'm never going to resolve this. What the hell? And you might find another quest where it's like, I already have the tool for this. So this is great. Just roll the dice again. And then aside from that, you have just a few other things. Like, you can go talk to the Lord just to kind of get updates on the quest, the main game's quest. You can do shopping, you can go to the end of the Recitate quest. There's like a seeker that you can go to, which kind of gives you tips on like how to progress through the dungeon, you need some assistance on it. And then also a zoo, which I suck at using, but you can capture monsters sometimes in the dungeon runs, and they kind of work alongside you in battles as like a companion of sorts. The one thing I hate about them is they die often because I don't heal them. They just get mauled. And it's like, well, that was a cool int I had there, and now he's dead. This sucks. And that is genuinely the gameplay loop for the most part. You dive deep, you do some looking, do some killing, don't die in there, you leave, you purchase new stuff, you level up, and you keep going through these processes. And each game has the same quests, but, or main quests rather, but it's different characters and different dungeon layouts as you progress. The only gripe I have, but it's a major gripe, I gotta say, is honestly, the UI is a bit of a nightmare.
Yeah, that was one of the gripes I had with the game is that. And I wasn't a big fan of like the 3D battle character art. Like, I know that stuff is going to be hit or miss, you know, based on taste. Yeah. But
that felt a lot more like it was assets that had just been like grabbed as opposed to where the scene art for events felt very much like it was like created for that scene. And then the combat art, it was like, okay, well, I mean, it was all consistent, but it felt a little more like it was like an asset as opposed to specifically created for this. It was like, well, there's bats, might as well throw bats in.
But yeah, the UI is definitely something that has to be worked on or touched up or just simplified something. It's clunky, it's cumbersome. Hopefully it could be addressed.
I can give one example right off the top of my head, because like, obviously there's a couple things here where it's like, you can like, it has like the button shortcuts, but you're like, well, I can scroll through them, so at least that's not all bad, but it's still a pain in the ass, but that's not a thing. But a big thing I will say flat out, when you have text that scrolls, you should start the text on a scene at the top of the dialogue and then have you press right on the cross pad to scroll through it. You don't start at the bottom and then make you press left to scroll right or scroll down and then right to scroll up. It doesn't make sense. You would think typically that if you're going to go between right and left, then right would be progress and left would be going backwards. You know, just like if you were going to push up and down, which honestly is what it should be, up would be to scroll up and down would scroll down. You know, it just makes sense there. So, for some reason, despite knowing how he has it set up in the game, I still typically find myself pushing the wrong direction when I need to scroll backwards in text because it starts you at the bottom when they tell you what it is. Drives me freaking crazy. Also, sometimes the text will scroll, like, well, you'll get a big block of text for an event or like an attack descriptive, and it just kind of cuts off a bit at the bottom of the box for some reason. Like, no scroll is just flat out, here it is. And you're like, okay, well, I guess that works. But, like, yeah, it's like, that, to me, is the biggest hit in the heart. Like, yeah, the monster art isn't all that particularly appealing to me either, but I will at least say that it might be, I mean, due to the price of it, if I'm looking for, like a cheap dungeon crawler game, the mechanics could get me past the monster layout, as long as the monsters don't just flat out suck. Which the monsters are okay. They don't make you go, oh crap, I'm fighting a brown lizard. Just like, it's a brown lizard. Just kill it. But the gameplay mechanics themselves work. The battles themselves, since you don't have MP and skill points, it's primarily built around just best utilization of what you've got to kill the monsters because you're not really worried about resources in that regard. Overall, though, I would say if you're seeking a dungeon crawling experience that's more of an old-fashioned, bare bones as far as, when I say bare bones, I mean like the systems aren't complicated. The most complicated it'll probably get is enchanted equipment, which is all over this game, and that's basically just like a different stats on the gear, so it's not going to break anybody's minds to figure that out. So if you want like more like a simple quick hit dungeon crawl sort of game with a variety of options in the form of the different classes you can choose from when you play through the game, I'd give it a solid try in that regard. But by no means are you going to come here and have your socks blown off. By no means are you going to come here expecting a party system. Do not come here expecting to find the next best thing since sliced Genghis. Just come here expecting a fairly straightforward, this is a guy who wants you to like his product, dungeon crawl experience. And I think you'll walk away feeling okay about that.
Well, the $9, what do you say?
I'd say it's a try.
I can go with you on that one. Cole, yeah, what did you think?
Yeah, I can justify a try it. I agree.
But, I mean, I'll be honest with you. Like, I came in prepped, like, and you know from when we were talking about it initially, I came in prepped to, like, I'm ready to deny this damn thing. And honestly, when I played it, because that's a lot of times with games like this, like, you need to play them to know how they work and what their mechanics are like. And I was like, you know, I can see myself enjoying this. I'll play more of this than the bear. And I enjoyed my time with it, so.
Yeah, it's one of those things where if you could get past it visually, there's a lot of fun to be had. Mm-hmm. I said this during the interview. It was, for me, it was always a case of, let me go down one more time and see how much further I could get.
Exactly, exactly. Mm-hmm. Those events, trying to plot your way through a floor, like, okay, the boss has to be around there, but there's like a bunch of monsters and some question marks. I'm going to take my chance on those question marks. Because, yeah, the events start to loop. Also, like, I want to see what these question marks are. They might be good things.
Or it might be that fucking beast that takes 189 of my hit points again.
Yeah, freaking asshole that jerk is. Unless you got some light armor. It's like, just skip right past him.
You could use a ration. No, I have 3 rations. I'm not going to use one of my rations for this fucking monster that's going to find me again.
If it makes you feel better, monster. I was reading on the Steam forum, and the monster was like the bane of everybody's existence to play the game. So that is not just an us thing. That's how people really fucking hate that event.
Nice. Monster OP, please nerf.
Yeah. He takes like 25% of your health regardless, no matter, there's nothing you can do to stop it.
Yeah, it sucks. All right. One last game to talk about for the party cast is called Gladiator Guild Manager Prologue, developed by Entertainment Forge, published by Grab the Games, releasing Q3 2020 on Steam, is on Kickstarter now through September 11th. So if the game sounds interesting, you could check out the Kickstarter. The link will be in the description below. Gladiator Guild Manager Prologue is a battle sim about managing your own gladiator guild in an epic fantasy world. Build and run your own guild, hire and train gladiators, develop unique tactics, manage resources, compete for the rank in the arena, and much more. Chris, tell us about this one.
All right, so I was, when it was like, it's a gladiator battle simulator kind of thing. Like, I was very worried. I was like, oh no, I'm going to be managing stats or whatever and like feeding my gladiators and like, you know, doing all this other stuff. No, it's actually weirdly. So it's basically like an RTS without the RT. So like it's an RTS that does not occur in real time, really. So you have this, hub of, you know, basically your guild, and you build like an RTS. You build like different buildings in like your grid, and they cost resources, of course, you know, wood, gold, iron, rocks, so forth. And like, but instead of being for like, you know, building various things that then you know, send out there, and then the enemy comes and they've obviously been spending 12 more hours building this stuff than you have, and they like decimate you or whatever. You just go back to the map and you click on an arena, which you start with only one. And then of course, you know, once you beat it, you expand more. You go in and you just choose to do a battle, and then your characters, you know, you choose which characters and you put them in the field, and then you just watch them go. And it's very addicting. It feels like an RTS kind of combined with a deck builder, but without any cards. It's just such a strange...
You have Cole's attention.
Yeah, it's such a strange soup, is what it is. It's like, it's a little bit like some different things that you recognize, but then it all comes together in like this way that like is unusual. So, that's like the basic thing about it. And of course, so you know, you basically build, you know, your building or whatever, your house, which there's a grid along the bottom with different slots. And those are where your basically your gladiators are going to go. You start off with the ability to have a team of four. But the more houses you build, the more those slots unlock so that you can have a larger pool of gladiators to pull from. And then, you know, if you build like, oh, let's say a temple, then suddenly you can actually hire healers. If you, you know, if you purchase like a, I forgot what it's called. It's like, let's just say it's a foresty thing and you can get, you know, dwarves. I don't know. Like, basically, the more things that you build, the more different kind of things that you build, the more kind of units you can unlock. But they're not units. They're actual gladiators. Like, again, I'm getting confused on genres here. Now, of course, everything costs money. So the way that you earn money is that you go into that arena and you send your guys in. And the more battles you win, of course, the more loot you get. And you can take that loot back to your hub and then improve everything. And in fact, not only can you build stuff, they say that upgrades are coming soon. So it's not in the prologue that I played, but apparently you can actually improve these buildings as well. Or you will be able to. So, yeah, the way that combat works is interesting because you basically click on the arena and the first arena is the graveyard and it has five battles. And so you, you know, you go in and you say to start a battle. And you get to choose from three battles that you want to fight. And it will show you the enemies that are going to be in this battle. And it will also have a number, like 3, 4, 5, 2, whatever. And that's the amount of units you're going to be able to send into that battle. So, and then, of course, there are different tiered rewards that you can get. So if you choose the most challenging of the fights, then you might end up with the best rewards. And some of them have a percentage of a chance for you to get an actual item. And we'll get into items in a second. So, like, you choose the one fight that has, like, let's say three. And you put in, you know, it's against, like, three, like, level one goblins or, you know, ogres, whatever they are. Orcs, I think. And you get to put in, like, let's say you purchased a knight and an orc and, like, an archer. And so you basically have your three people that you can set in there. You can put them on anywhere on your 50% of the battlefield. So if you want to like have them go back so that, you know, while they're charging towards the enemy, your archer can already be shooting arrows. You can do it that way. Or if you have more like, let's say more archers, then you'll want your guy closer to the front so that he can start absorbing damage so that they don't have to. You know, there's different ways to strategize about it. But again, once the battle starts, you have no more control over your player. Like, the only thing that you can do if you click on your unit while the combat is going is that you can sell them. So, which I think is kind of an amusing reality. It's just like, like this orc is getting his ass handed to him. I was like, well, I'm going to go sell him right quick.
You're out. And, peace.
And then the knight and the Valkyrie are like, what the hell, man? Where'd he go? Anyways. So yeah, and basically every time a unit goes down, everybody that is in that battle at the moment gets experience points and they get to gain levels. So this is where the game takes, an interesting fork in that when you choose a new game, you can of course choose your difficulty. You know, you get an easy that they don't recommend, normal, which is actually also kind of easy that they do recommend, and then hard, which is, you know, for the hardcore. You also have a choice of permadeath. So you can actually, if your character dies in combat, you can have them be permanently killed off, which of course every unit costs resources to get into your party. So it becomes this thing of like, oh dang, if I keep losing, then I'm going to lose all my money and, you know, that's going to be like bad. Or you can choose to not have permadeath and then basically every unit that dies, you know, if every unit dies and you get a game over, then it's still like whatever battles you won, it still gives you the reward. So you can basically just send your people in there and have them be woefully unprepared. They all get their heads cut off, but you end up, you know, pocketing a bunch of gold and wood and, you know, you take that back to your thing and they're all good as new over there. So
win-win.
That was the way I did it.
Win-win.
And, So, you know, that's the thing, though, is that if you don't have permadeath, then you get to grind. You can actually have your characters just do two or three battles out of the five. And then instead of choosing to fight the next battle, you can choose to surrender. And this is one pet peeve I'm going to, like, call out to the developer. Please fix the spelling on the word surrender. It has two R's. I mean, it has a double R and then another R at the end. It's just all single R's the way they have it spelled out right now. Anyways. But yeah, if you choose to surrender, then basically you just take all of your rewards and go home. And that's kind of beneficial to do if you're looking to get like a higher level unit, because once you beat an arena, it's locked away. It's now beaten, and then you have to choose the next arena, which is, of course, going to be scaled up in difficulty. But at the same time, if you can win at least one fight, then you can grind, because, you know, if everybody gets killed, you still get the reward for that one fight that you won. So, then that gets us into items. So there's also an item shop where you can purchase pieces of armor that will improve your characters in different ways, raise their movement speed, raise their HPs, their power. Every unit gets to equip one thing for every five levels up to, I guess, level 20, because there's four slots, you know, three of which are locked away in the, you know, at first. So yeah, there's like potential for a lot of character growth in that they can like equip a whole bunch of cool stuff. And that item shop, just like a dungeon crawler, actually changes inventory when you go out to an arena. So it's worth it to have like enough you know, gold kind of going in to be able to purchase that nice sass shield that, you know, you saw a couple of fights ago. So, yeah, it's basically like it's, you know, it's this kind of push and pull of like building up your units and your resources and, you know, getting different kinds of characters in your party, which, by the way, there's one character. It's kind of like the mage class, but it's like a pyromancer or an explosives technician or something like that. I can't remember the exact name of the unit, but it throws fireballs and it's OP. So definitely unlock that as soon as you can, because holy sheez, as soon as I got two of those guys, I would put them in every fight and they would just throw these explosives across the field and murder everybody immediately. I love them so much. Yeah, so where's healers? It took me a long time to get my healers to like start doing things because they kept getting killed by archers immediately. Because archer AI is like trained for seeking out healers first. So yeah, there's a little bit of that. There's a lot of variety, a lot of spice. There are necromancers who will raise dead units off the field and have them fight as zombies. There's all kinds of cool stuff that happens in this game. So
lots there, and it's just a prologue.
Yeah, it's just a prologue, and I'm like, I need to play the full version of this game. This is like, it's taking so many things from genres I don't normally care about, and it just mixed them up so perfectly. Go ahead.
I was going to say, you could jump onto Kickstarter and show your support for this one right now. The minimum donation to get a copy of the game when it's ready to go is $15. So I guess we'll base this on that. For $15, what do you think of this one?
Oh, absolute buy it. Go support these people because they are making a really nice game here. Like I said, need some polish. And they do give you a warning at the beginning. They're like, if the gladiators are acting weird, let us know, which is how they decided to put it. This game is like, man, you are going to spend hours clicking on this thing because I think it's really fun. I'm going to throw $15 at it at least. Nice. I mean, I put more than that towards Ashina the Red Witch, but, you know, which, by the way, got funded. I don't know if I mentioned that last week.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, Ashina the Red Witch is funded now, so yay. And my name's going to be in the credits because I paid for that tier.
Nice.
Yeah. So, yeah, definitely throw some money at these guys. Check this game out. It is fun, fun, fun.
Cool beans. All right. Well, that is it for us. Cole, are you excited? Jacob's coming on.
Oh, boy.
You sound so excited. Are you thrilled?
Oh. Please let me contain myself.
All right. Well, while Cole and I go do that, Chris, Purnell, do either of you have any final words?
Bedtime for old Bongo here. I'm sleepy as a beep.
I can't. Yeah, that's fine.
All right, and finally tonight we're bringing in Jacob Garner. Jacob, how are you doing?
I should be napping right now, but I'm not.
Me too.
Yeah, that's fair. We're adults. We're old.
Yeah.
You know, but
my back hurts.
Mine did too earlier in the week. You know, because we're old and fat and lazy.
Yeah.
That too. However, we do have somebody with me. I do have somebody with me.
Do tell.
Want to say hi to the folks?
Hi. All
right, so this is my oldest son, Sam. You know, longtime listeners will know he's been on the show before. We did Super Toy Racers 2. Was there another one?
I don't remember.
I don't recall. You don't think so? Okay. All right, well, he has better knowledge of it than me, apparently, so.
Yeah, kids have good memories. We don't.
Yeah, that's kind of unfortunate. I figure I'll be paying for years of therapy later.
Yeah. Good anyway. Stuff. So. So, you wanted to talk about Lego City Undercover first, right?
Yeah, a little bit, just because that's been, like, our game that we play together. Sam, what did we finally do?
Beat Rex Fury!
So, Rex Fury is the main bad guy. I mean, although there is a secret big bad in there, but, you know... Well, right. I mean, the game's only been out for 7 years now, I think.
Exactly. Don't spoil it.
Right. You know, Mr. Joe's got, like, you know, 3,000 other games he has to play before he gets to it. So, you know, we can't spoil the big ending for it, okay?
Yeah.
Okay. But, so Rex Fury's, like, the big bad guy. And, like, once you beat the game, like, you can play as him, which... You know, as with all Lego games, there's a bunch of replayability with it. And, like, there's certain areas you can't access until you have his ability. So...
His ability.
Because remember, what's his ability?
He's super strong, but there's big boxes that we need his strength for.
Right, because he can pull them, like, he can break them open and, like, there's actually, like, a whole area of the game that you can't access until you have his strength. Mm-hmm. So, it's a nice tip of the hat to, which one was it? Was it San Andreas? Was it Grand Theft Auto San Andreas had, the Statue of Liberty in there? You don't know. Don't play Grand Theft Auto.
I'm gunning down thugs in my spare time.
apparently he's playing stuff that I don't know about.
And I think it was 4 that had the
statue. Yeah, I don't really statue. Remember. I 4 came out towards the end of my first time in college, so I never really finished playing it. Because I also played it on a super tiny TV.
No.
You know.
Remember when they used to release new Grand Theft Auto games?
Yeah, I like that thing about how there's been, like... Jess is making faces at him. That's why. Hi, Jess.
Hi.
Oh boy, like 3/4 of the Garner family is on today.
The busy episode.
Indeed. One of these days we'll get her to review something. So anyway, so as like a nice tip of the hat to the Grand Theft Auto series, there's a Statue of Liberty in Lego City Undercover that you can't access until after you've beaten the game. Mm. And of course there's secrets, you know, abound in there, but nothing as weird as Grand Theft Auto.
Nothing gets as weird as Grand Theft Auto.
That is also fair.
What about the real one who made the Wimpop plan?
Made it with a what?
The one who was helping my family.
Yeah, that's the secret big bad that we're not going to spoil.
Oh.
Okay.
So what do you think of Lego City Undercover? Is that game worth picking up?
Mm-hmm. What he needs to hear you. You can't just muffle it into the pillow.
Yes.
Yeah. So, yeah. Okay, that's fair. Just hang out from halfway across the room.
Yeah.
I mean, Sam, you're enjoying it a lot, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, are there parts that you get frustrated with, though?
Mm-hmm.
Like what?
You tell him.
No. No, because you're helping with the review. Come on. Mm-hmm. What do you get frustrated with, Sam?
I'm not telling
him. All right, so he's not going to tell, so I'll have to. So, essentially, you have to realize, like, this is Sam's first foray into this kind of sandbox game.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of platforming elements that, you know, it's one of those things, like, he's eventually going to have to just get used to if he's going to play games like Super Mario Brothers and all that other kind of stuff, which are present here. And so, like, a lot of double jumps, you know, aren't the easiest to make in this game. Or, like, you have to follow, like, a set flight path. And then there's also, like, missions that you can do that involve chasing after a suspect in, like, a high-speed chase.
Or chasing an alien.
Right, or chasing an alien, like, which beamed down with the astronauts and stuff like that. Some of those he's had quite a time with, and so, like, granted he's sixth, and I think the actual, like target age for this game is probably, like, 10-ish, I think. So, you know, it's... You know, he's had some difficulties with it. My biggest gripe with it is that, first off, loading times in the game are a little obscene, especially, like, when somebody wants to call in another vehicle, like Sam has a tendency of doing when I'm in the middle of a mission. And because what happens is that it literally will stop all other vehicles that are they're driving around in the game. And so if I'm in the middle of a high-speed chase, all of a sudden, like, my speed goes down to zero. Well, I'm glad you think it's hilarious right now. Which has caused quite a few missions to have to be restarted. And then there's also, like, weird glitching with it, where it's just, like, sometimes after starting up one of these missions and failing, it'll transport the other person's back, like, to where that mission is. So, like, he could be on the other side of the island, but... all of a sudden, boom, he's now in the forest with me.
That has to be just kidding.
Yeah, that actually happened this morning. And then the other thing is that it's just... Also, it's a semi-glitchy game. And I'm a little surprised that they didn't do more quality assurance with this. But, you know, at the same time, at this point, it's 7 years old and... it doesn't seem like they're going to return to make another Lego City Undercover game. I'd be up for it, but yeah, you would be too.
Me three.
But yeah, like, also what's fun is that Lego actually has, like, a URL in some of the hints for, like, a survey that they did, because they did this for a couple of other games where you're supposed to fill out the survey and tell them what you thought of the game. Yeah, the link doesn't even work anymore. It's not even known by LEGO or TT. So, I don't know who to tell our thoughts about it, but...
nice.
You know.
I'm dying over here. Sorry.
That's unfortunate. But I mean, it's like a lot of the older LEGO games where it's just like the missions can be broken up into like 30 to 60 minute chunks. Which is kind of nice. And I think the only other... I mean, it's a standard LEGO game otherwise in that respect. I think my only other issue with it is that, like, to save, you can't just, like... I mean, at least it's better than LEGO Star Wars, where you had to make it all the way to the end of the level for it to save any of your progress. Here, you pretty much have to... either complete your mission or you have to call in a vehicle or something like that to make the game autosave. Mm-hmm. And so you're at the mercy of that. So I don't know. I mean, I'd recommend it. It's on sale pretty regularly for about $10.
Yeah.
So, and I'd gotten it for Sam for Christmas, last year, cause he found a Chase McCain book, and Chase McCain's the main character of the game. At the school library, so he went nuts over that one, especially when he saw the ad in the back for the Lego City Undercover game.
Nice.
So
no, that was a set.
Well, yeah, but they also had, all right, so to show the age of this.
Oh yeah,
that, I will remember. Yeah, Yeah, the ad for the video game was advertising how it was exclusively on Wii U.
Yeah.
Which is like... So, I really like it. Sam, what do you think? Would you recommend people to buy it? Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, what?
Yes.
Okay, there we go.
All right, sounds good. You spent a little longer on that than I thought you would for a game we're not officially reviewing.
It's all right. Jacob. It's all right. We can still make a nice tweet and all that kind of stuff about it. And maybe we'll get noticed for whatever next LEGO game is. I don't.
Nah, we won't. Final game to talk about tonight is called Wide Awake Pip, developed by Coral Reef IO, available on iOS and Android for $1.99. Wide Awake Pip is a narrative adventure game that I created for my three young kids. They're lucky to have many brilliant children's books with stunning illustrations and beautiful stories, but we found that there were relatively few kids' apps to equal them. Wide Awake Pip is the creator's attempt to close that gap a little. Obviously, those are words from the creator. We covered this one with Tim and his kid a couple of episodes ago, and now you wanted to take a look at it as well, yes?
Yep.
So yeah. Tell us about it.
Well, Sam, what do you think? Well, all right, so I'll start off. All right, so it's pretty much, you know, as the description goes, it's this mixture of like a storybook and activities surrounding this squirrel named Pip, and you have to guide her through all these misadventures as she accidentally gets... She falls out of her tree and gets separated from her dad, like, you know, on the other side of the forest. And so you have to befriend some other animals and have some little activities and make your way back. You're going to agree with me on that? That was factually true? Mm-hmm. Okay, good. Yeah. All right. Yeah. All right. We'll get to the face paint part. Okay. So anyways, So there is a story thing, but there is stuff to do in between. Like there's an activity, like you have to guide Pip, which means that you have to use your finger to like guide her up or down a tree. You have to collect butterflies. What were we going to say?
See the woods.
Yeah, right. So at the end of each chapter, like the game goes over this kind of like vocabulary thing. And it tries to get the kids to at least be able to say the words, even if they can't read them. And it provides a picture with it, you know, which was kind of good because Sam hasn't, you know, he graduated kindergarten and he hasn't had a lot of practice with reading over the summer because we moved and we're trying to unpack the house. And it's just, you know, so it was
you
nice.
You and your excuses.
It was nice.
You know, virus.
Yeah, and the coronavirus, right, which is messing up everything, isn't it, buddy?
Mm-hmm. No.
You know, it was nice to get him back into the swing of some of the stuff. Like, we were sounding out some of the words, and of course the pictures helped with that. And then also there's, like, a face, like, you know, like a little thing where you can, you know, paint a character's face with, like, all these different colors and stuff like that.
A flute.
A what?
It's flute.
A flute? Yes. Oh, fruit. Fruit.
Yeah. The inside of it.
Right. There's a part, yeah, they have kind of like a, not like a food fight, but they gorge themselves on fruit, and there's all this like little sticky fruit left all over so they can paint their faces with it. And then...
Wait, but then there's a water part where you can take it off. You can erase it.
Okay, and then you can erase it if you don't like what you had done. Mm-hmm. Or you want to start over.
Or you made a mistake.
Right, so that's pretty handy. And then, like, you also have to, like, tap on the butterfly, so it kind of helps with, like, motion coordination and stuff like that.
You have to hit the pelican really fast, that's...
Right, you have to help the pelican fly. And, are there any other activities?
I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, you only got to play through it once.
I don't even... Yeah, that's the other thing.
Yeah, I only let him play through it once. Because I know, I'm terrible.
Yeah, you are.
All right, hey, enough of the fart noises. Anyway, so I thought it was really cute, and especially for $1.99. It's a little shorter than I thought it would be, but, you know, Sam was entertained throughout, and I do appreciate the variety that's in it of all the different stuff that you could do. Sam, what did you think? Do you like it? Mm-hmm. What'd you like the best?
I like the face paint.
You like the face paint part the best?
Yeah. behind I made a lot of mustache.
he did spend quite a bit of time on that part. Did you like any of the other sections, like guiding Pip?
I liked the dirt and also guiding the pelican up.
Okay, guiding the pelican. Was there anything you didn't like about it?
Nope.
No? I did. It gets,
gets a thumbs up.
Yeah, you really liked it? Mm-hmm. Thumbs up from you. He's giving it. Stop he's it. Giving two thumbs up.
Two thumbs up. Sweet.
So
$1.99 sounds like that one's a buy it.
Yeah, I would definitely recommend it. It's, I mean, I haven't had to play a lot of iOS games as of late, but it's definitely one I'd recommend. Sam, would you recommend it?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
All right. So, good stuff. All right. Well, that is it for this episode. We made it through another one. Yeah, Jacob, yeah. Thanks for being here.
No problem. And
thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Ooh, very polite. Good job, buddy.
Thanks to everyone else who was on the episode. I have no clue who was on here because we're recording this on Saturday and nothing else has been recorded yet. So
Wait, hold on. So you get upset when I break the fourth wall.
You're allowed to? It's my show.
That's fair, I guess.
Yeah, I'm allowed to do whatever I want. Do you have any final words to end the show?
No, I don't. Sam, do you have any final words?
Mm-mm.
No? Okay. Nope, we don't.
Helpful.
Very, very.